Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, here again to talk with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, we are delighted to be here with you today as we kick off Black History Month 2019. I like to celebrate Black history every day because we all understand that Black history is American history, but there's a special time that in this country we have to set a month apart to do it because we recognize and understand there are people in this country, unless the month was set aside, unless it was forced upon them, unless we actually did all the work to make it easy for them to understand about Black history, they wouldn't teach it at all. And until that day comes, when every single person in this country can recognize that Black history is American history, and every single teacher in this country can teach Black history within the American history curriculum, when every single principal, administrator, every single parent, store owner, every single male person understands that our history is just as significant, just as important, and just as necessary as we seek to understand the American history narrative. When that happens, then perhaps we won't need to set aside a month. But until we get to that point, then we will celebrate, and we are excited about having you celebrate with us. We have a show for you today that will help you to understand Black History Month. Later on in this hour, I'm going to talk to Dr. Jessica Marie Johnson from Hopkins University, and she's going to talk to us about the transatlantic slave trade and why the Black History Month theme this year is Black Migrations, celebrating the arrival of the first 20 or so odd Negroes into this country, August 1619. We're celebrating that today. It's 2019, 400 years of Black genius and Black brilliance and Black creativity and also Black suffering and Black pain and Black survival and Black resilience. We are celebrating that today as we kick off the beginning of Black History Month 2019. In the second hour, I'm going to be joined by Erica Bridgeford from the Baltimore Ceasefire because tonight they kick off the Baltimore Ceasefire. We're going to talk about what that means for Baltimore, what you can do to participate while we're still at a moment where we need to actually tell people not to kill anyone for 72 hours. We still got to do that until that day when we don't have to deal with homicide numbers in the triple digits. We don't have to deal with homicide numbers at all. So until that happens, we will continue to celebrate and support the Baltimore ceasefire. So we'll do that in the second hour. But first, before we break down Black History Month, we have to play Blackopoly. Now, I want to note that for this month, we have pulled out books that are going to be a wonderful addition to your library, and we're going to start giving them away. So the first book that we're offering, Faces at the Bottom of the Well, The Permanence of Racism by Derek Bell. It's a national bestseller. It has a new preface by the author that's Faces at the Bottom of the Well, The Permanence of Racism is the first book we're offering. And we're going to do a softball question from the beginning. Like, we just got to put it out here, get you all warmed up, because the questions are going to get harder today. So this is a two-part question. I would like to know, when you give me a call, what year did Negro History Week begin, and what year did Negro History Week become Black History Month? I'm going to repeat that. It's a two-part question. What year did Negro History Week begin, and what year did Black History Month start getting celebrated? Because we understand that Negro History Week became Black History Month. You give me those 2 years and you win a copy of the national bestseller by Derek Bell, Faces at the Bottom of the Well. Our conversation today is about Black History Month in this first hour, trying to figure out why it's important, trying to figure out why we celebrate it, trying to figure out why it's still necessary. I'm wondering, and my question of the day is whether or not we still need to have a Black History Month. Now, you know, at the start of the show, I just laid out to you why I think we still should. But I want to hear from you, because there are some people who are arguing that maybe we don't need Black History Month anymore. Maybe we should start looking at ways that we can bring everybody's history into it. In fact, maybe we should do what President Obama did. He called it African American History Month. I mean, I still go with the original title of Black History Month. I have not changed that. But do you think we should still celebrate Black History Month and why? That's the question. Do you think we should still celebrate Black History Month and why? Now, we went to the streets and we asked some fourth graders to give us their answer to this question. 8848. Let's take a listen to what young people coming out of an elementary middle school in Silver Spring, what they had to say about whether or not we should continue to have Black History Month and whether or not we need a White History Month. So let me ask you, people have been talking about the fact that maybe it's time for us to stop having Black History Month. Do you think we should do away with Black History Month?
I think no, because we have it to celebrate African Americans and how they shaped our country. So for me, I think that if you take away Black History Month, it's just saying like, oh, they're not really important to the country, even though they shaped how it is today.
Because if we take it away, it's like forgetting all the people that brought this country to where it is today. And like, black people have, like, ever since they came as slaves, they've, like, I guess, well, like, developed, like, through, like, they learned to read and write and everything, even though they weren't allowed to. They got into schools, and it's just getting, like, better and better for African Americans. And if we take away Black History Month, it's like forgetting the past.
Well, one reason you might want to take it away is to show that every month is basically Black History Month, so it's supposed to be, I guess, it's very important that it could be every day instead of just one month.
So those are fourth graders talking about the importance of Black History Month. Should we continue to have Black History Month? I invite you to join the conversation, 410-319-8888. I do have in front of me the Black History Month statement that was released by the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, ASALA, which was founded by Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who's also the father of Negro history and started Negro History Week. I just want to share that with you as we go into our conversation. The year opens with the theme Black Migrations. As the founders of Black History Month, the Association for the Study of African American Life and History believes that migration represents one of the most important aspects of our nation's past. Think about that, folks. ASALA's founder, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, understood the meaning of migration when he wrote A Century of Negro Migration back in 1918. He presented the facts as to how the Negroes in the United States have struggled under adverse circumstances to flee from bondage and oppression in quest of a land offering asylum, to the oppressed and opportunity to the unfortunate. As ASALA gives attention to the many stories and forms of migration over the centuries and also in the present, we give special attention to the year 1619, when Africans arrived on two slave ships in the Virginia colony, the first permanent English settlement in North America. Think about that, folks. 400 years of Black brilliance, Black survival, Black resistance, and what it means to struggle and to overcome in this country. The Black History Month theme for 2019 is Black Migrations. And the question I'm asking you, should we continue to have a Black History Month? Haven't we got to a point where people can understand that Black history is American history? Don't we have enough people who work as teachers and doctors and lawyers and who are Black in this country that maybe we don't have to remind people of our contributions? Give me a call, 410-319-8888. I have Robert on the phone from Ellicott City. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Actually, I'm trying to stay warm since it's so cold outside.
I'm glad you are, and I'm glad you're staying warm and listening to our show.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I try to listen periodically when I can, and today I happen to be here listening. So I want to do two things. One, your question about what we refer to as Negro History Week, which was founded by Carter G. Woodson back in 1926.
Yes.
And then later became Negro History Month. When I graduated in 1970.
And then it became Black History Month.
Black History Month, right.
Right. Now, you have the first part of the question correct. It was. He announced it in 1925, but it was not celebrated until 1926. But the year that it became Black History Month, you don't have that one correct.
1970?
Not 1970. I can't give the answer, but it's not 1970.
Well, some people, I'm going to beg to differ because some people would say that it was 1976. But as a member of Mega Psi Phi Fraternity, we do have some documentation that it actually started because he proposed it back in 1970.
Right. Now, I know. Now, you know, I never go against the Qs because I know Dr. Woodson was one of your brothers. Right. But what we look at, and the reason why we were talking with 1975, I'll just go ahead and put it out there, was because that was a year through the efforts of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity that President Gerald Ford signed it to make that something that's nationally recognized and that the president puts forth a proclamation as of 1975. But, you know, I don't argue with Qs at all. Not when it comes to Dr. George G. Woodson. Like, that's your frat brother.
That's right, and I appreciate that. and the real important thing, Doctor, is that we're still having this conversation about the importance of understanding African American history as it relates to America.
Yes.
And I'm hopeful that we will figure out a way to make sure, especially in Black communities, African American communities, to make sure that our children understand. Mm. Where we came from,
right?
Because that's the only way we're going to figure out where we need to go. And it's just so unfortunate that even though we have some of the levers of power in these counties and cities, for some reason, well, I know part of the reason is, we can't seem to get in the public sphere a way to make sure that African-American children understand the rich and varied history, that we're all Africans, and that we contributed mightily to this country.
Yes.
So with that, I'm going to hang up and listen to other people and remind our people, all of my children, we continue to celebrate Kwanzaa because I wanted to make sure they understood that we came from richness and we will continue to maintain richness in our family and in our community, but we must teach our children our history. And with that, I'll hang up.
Thank you. But don't hang up, though. We want to give you this gift. Derek Bell, Faces at the Bottom of the Well. Justina, hold on. We're going to get your information. But, folks, of course, as always, I don't fight with the Omegas because Carter G. Woodson was a member of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity, and it was the efforts of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity. Of course, they were joined by many others throughout the country that pushed Negro History Week, which became Black History Week, which became Black History Month. But President Gerald Ford signed that proclamation in 1975. So what is interesting, folks, is every year since then, presidents have released a proclamation stating that we are nationally recognizing that February is Black History Month. Now, I want to note that we don't look at February as a celebration for Black History Month because it's the shortest month of the year. People always laugh and say, oh, we have it's the shortest month of the year. No, this month was selected by Carter G. Woodson because this month has both the birthday of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, which were already being celebrated in the Black community. So that's why he chose a week in February, and that's why Black History Month is in February, not because it's so short, but because it was actually chosen by Dr. Carter G. Woodson in the beginning. So let's talk about the ways in which we as Black people have been dealing with 400 years of resistance and brilliance and survivor. And I actually reached out to Dr. Jessica Marie Johnson. She's an assistant professor of history at Johns Hopkins University to join me. Dr. Johnson, how are you?
I'm good. Hi, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm so excited to finally have you on the show. It's so difficult to get you, but I'm excited to have you. No, you're wonderful. Dr. Johnson, folks, does a lot of research looking at slavery. I mean, she studied under Dr. Ira Berlin at University of Maryland College Park. And so can you talk to us, Dr. Johnson, about the importance of us recognizing 1619 as kind of the beginning when you had the arrival of the first 20 or so odd Negroes into this country, and how does that fit into the slave narrative overall?
So recognizing, thank you, and thanks for having me. I really am glad to be here and so excited because I listen to your show all of the time. So you're doing such a service. So thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
The year 1619 is really, really important. It marks the first sort of widely recognized instance of Africans arriving in what is then British mainland North America and what becomes the Chesapeake. So really right in our neighborhood, right here in Virginia and Maryland. The two ships land in Point Comfort, and they sort of kick off what becomes the gendered racial hierarchy that will become plantation slavery, tobacco here in Maryland, and and Virginia. It will, you know, as we know, last into another couple of centuries, create the Deep South cotton regime. And it will spawn all kinds of hierarchies, like all kinds of ways of thinking about blackness, about thinking about Africanness, about gender, about reproduction and sexuality that really kind of structure how we understand the world today, how we relate to each other. And we need to make sure that we recognize that date, that year, that we understand that 400 years is an incredibly long time. 1619 to 1863 or 1865 is also an incredibly long time. So even as we think about 1619 as a beginning, we also need to think about how far we have come and how long it has taken to get there. And so even though I was listening a little bit before, there are ways that people maybe have conversations about Black History Month as something that maybe we can let go of. If we think of, like, this has just been a drop in the bucket. What is it, like, I think 1976 is when Black History Month becomes an actual month, you know, and that's nothing. That's a generation, barely.
Right.
And so if we think of those 400 years with and our generations of Black History Month, our generations, our couple of generations of the end of official legal segregation, although we know that there's residues that continue, keeping 1619 in mind helps us keep that long reach in mind as well.
Now, let me ask you, Dr. Johnson, because I think that some people need to understand that slavery evolved. So I'm thinking about, you know, of course, when you look at, you know, the first 20 or so odd Negroes, and I keep referring to that phrase, Anthony, Isabella, William, some of the names of the first folks who came here. But the slavery that existed then, and whether it was indentured servitude or just, you know, short-term slavery, was different than how it evolved to how we talk about it today. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, so first, it's good to keep in mind those 20 odd Negroes, that 1619 disembarkation, is the result of a longer slave trade that had been happening for a couple centuries before that. So if we think back, we just want to put like a couple of like time frames in our mind. If we think back, like 1502 is the first recognized instance of a slave trade, African slaves being shipped across the Atlantic to the Americas, and they end up in Hispaniola, which is present-day Dominican Republic. So that's 1502. And then even before that, you had 1444, which is understood to be the first instance of Africans being transported from what is present-day Senegal or Senegal and the Gambia to Portugal. So this is a long, long sweep of trading that evolved over a long period of time. So by the time you get to 1619, there is a traffic in Black bodies that is happening back and forth across the Atlantic. And even in that traffic, there are instances, like as you were saying with this ship, where it actually isn't always clear from the records whether these are Africans who are slaves, these are Africans who are indentured servants.
Right.
This is a ship that was actually captured from the Portuguese, who are still shipping their Africans to Brazil, to the Caribbean, to other places in South America. So there's all kinds of dynamics that are happening in this world. And so this is a world that has been described as one that is, the 1619 world is one that is cosmopolitan, one in which there's a lot of violence happening, but also a lot of negotiation and transfer and exchange. And so the slavery that evolved from that, though, is not the same. So even if these 20-odd Negroes are indentured, what they find is that very quickly in Virginia and Maryland, the opportunities for indentured servitude, for any kind of free labor, particularly if you're of African descent, closed down very, very quickly. They closed down in part because British officials, governors are doing their best to secure land, are doing their best to secure labor, whether it's indentured servants or enslaved. And slavery, if we think of the economic value of it, indentured servants eventually get free. They get after they have a term of like four, seven, maybe 10 years, but they do get free and they are supposed to get their parcel of land. So slavery made more economic sense. And in that, creating rifts between indentured servants, white, indigenous, and Africans, free Africans, those who had been able to secure their freedom, was also a high priority. And so by about 1705, you have the institution of a slave code that is a much more final slave code that definitively says slavery follows the mother, that definitively says if you are a slave, you're a slave for life, and creates these kind of more rigid boundaries between slave and free, between indentured labor, between enslaved labor, and is doing its best to create and solidify a regime that says that if you are black, then you will be a slave and you will be a worker. But it takes time. I mean, 1619 to 1705 is quite a bit of time. It takes a significant amount of work on behalf of the governor to create these rifts. Mm-hmm. It takes a rebellion,
right?
A failed rebellion, Bacon's Rebellion, that also happens in this time period. And so even as we can think about the evolution of the solidification of these regimes of slavery, we also want to think about how hard that was. How much unity there must have been and alliances and organizing there must have been between Africans and poor whites, Africans and unpropertied whites, Africans and indigenous at this time period, for it to take as long as it did. And then those kind of cycles, that up and down flow of moments of possibility, moments of potential negotiation, still moments of like violence and disruption.
Right.
These are not happy societies to live in by any long means, but these spaces are also have this arc where they opportunities for freedom begin to close down into slave societies, and then at some point, sometimes they also open back up. Sometimes opening back up is something like the U.S. Civil War,
right,
which is where we ended up with the Emancipation Proclamation.
Now, let me ask you one more question, Dr. Johnson. Mm-hmm. We definitely appreciate your time. If you were to give us one lesson that we learned from slavery, like what's the one thing that we as black people, when we look back at our history, because, I mean, you laid it out so eloquently, and I appreciate that. But like, what is one lesson that you think we've learned from that period, or we should learn from that period?
I think we should learn that there are always harder times ahead, which I find very bracing right now.
Right.
Like this is a hard time right now,
right,
for anybody who cares about humanity. And knowing that we have experienced harder times, certainly harder than our everyday reality today, and that we will probably experience harder times in the future. But even within that, we continue to create bonds with each other. We continue to find avenues of resistance. We continue to innovate. And we continue to love each other very hard. And I find that's what inspires me and propels me into a period where things seem so dark. That even in that darkness, the reality is we created the U.S., we created the new world. And how we did that is a matter of celebration as well as a matter of caution to think about in the future.
I appreciate that. Dr. Yeah. Jessica Marie Johnson, Assistant Professor of History at Johns Hopkins University. You can find her on Twitter. You can find her on Facebook. She does a lot of work in digital humanities. Dr. Jessica, my soror, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Soror.
All right, folks, hold it here. When we come back, we're going to open up our conversation to you again. What do you think we should do in terms of going forward? Because people are talking about ending Black History Month, starting White History Month. Like, we're having all kinds of conversations, and we want to include you in the discussion. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, celebrating the first day of Black History Month with you.
Oxford town around the bend, come to the door, couldn't get in.
Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here on this first day of Black History Month. What you heard coming in, folks, if you're not familiar with it, that was Billie Holiday singing Strange Fruit. And what she's talking about in this song, she's talking about black bodies being lynched. And when you see the black bodies swinging from the southern trees, blood on the root. Yes, as we talk about who we are as people in this country and we celebrate 400 years of Black resilience, Black brilliance, Black genius, Black suffering, Black pain, and Black joy, we stop and think about what it took for us to get over, and that we are living in a country that celebrated the lynching of Black bodies. They would have picnics, cookouts at lynchings, and there would be husbands there, fathers, wives, / mothers, and children as young as 2 and 3 years old, as we see from the pictures, at the picnics. They are cooking out and eating burgers while Black bodies are swinging from the trees, folks. That's who we are in this country, an ugly history, but it is our history. And it's something we have to understand, teach, talk about, so we don't repeat it. So we don't end up where we are now, where you have lynching being moved to the killing of unarmed Black people. So we're celebrating Black History Month by asking the question, should we continue to have Black History Month? Like, what is it going to take for people to teach about Black history every month except for February? Right? So let's think about it. People stop in February and they teach Black History Month, and then in March they continue on with what they call regular history and they don't include Black folks. In January they're teaching regular history and they don't include Black folks. My problem with Black History Month, and I think about this because I had a student that I taught at West Baltimore Middle School. When I raised the question, the first Black History Month I celebrated at West Baltimore Middle School, I asked students, what do you know about Black history? And a student, I kid you not, folks, a student raised her hand and she summed up Black History Month for me. She said it was Harriet Tubman running away to freedom. She joined Dr. King. They got on the bus. They jumped over a broom. They made their way to Canada. That was her understanding of Black History Month. She had dates all mixed up, people and times and places all mixed up, because that's how we teach Black History Month. We teach it in 28 days. We do 1 week of slavery. We do 1 week of the Civil Rights Movement. We do 1 week where we talk about struggle and resistance. And we do 1 week now on President Obama. And we have collapsed 400 years of history into 28 days, and that is a disservice. So should we still celebrate it? Let's talk about it. 410-319-8888. I have Joanne on the phone from Woodstock, a new caller. Joanne, welcome to the family.
Hi. Good afternoon, Dr. K.
Good afternoon.
This is my first time calling in.
Yes, welcome. Welcome. Thank you.
And I'm grateful that you present a lot of thought-provoking topics for us to consider.
Thank you.
So my opinion is, until they incorporate Black history in the curriculums in school and social studies, that's when we can let go of Black History Month. My opinion is that that's part of our history, and it should be covered in the curriculums in all the books.
Right.
And the kids should be able to learn about people and who look like them and who contributed to our society. We have made so many discoveries, so many contributions in science, engineering, hair care.
Everything.
I mean, I can go on and on and on. We invented the elevator, the traffic light.
Come on. So,
children, until they embrace their history, until they are taught it every day like they teach all the other history, we celebrate Christopher Columbus' birthday. That's an opening for us to talk about how they came over and slaughtered people on the boat and brought them over here. And he was a murderer and a thief.
Yes, he was.
And we have a holiday for him?
Yep.
Until we incorporate it into our curriculum, kids from pre-K all the way up into high school, until it's part of American history. Because why do we have to be separated again? We're separate. It's a separate history.
Right.
But we earned that history here in the United States of America. So when are we ever going to be incorporated into the fabric of this nation?
That's what I'm talking about.
We are born and raised here. We work here. We contribute intellectually here. We contribute with employment here. We pay our taxes. So when are we ever going to be incorporated into the history? And you look at the presidency now. We're trying to erase President Obama from history.
Yes, we are.
We all know that that cannot be done, but yet it's still being attempted. So that's my opinion.
All right, thank you, Joanne. I appreciate you. Folks, Joanne laid it down, but it leads me into our next Blackopoly question. Like, we're going to play Blackopoly a lot this month. We're going to make sure everybody gets a little piece of Black history they can walk away with. The question on the table now is, name the person who invented America's first clock. This person was a farmer, a mathematician, an astronomer, and a land surveyor. The first person to call to tell me the name of the person who invented America's first clock will receive this book by Bruce Levine, which is Half Slave and Half Free, The Roots of the Civil War. I'm giving that out to the first person who can call and tell me the name of the person who invented America's first clock. Let's get back to our phone calls. We have Ernie on the phone from West Baltimore. Ernie, how are you?
Dr. K, you know I love your show. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. I'm so glad you called back.
Benjamin Banneker.
Okay.
You said the questions were going to get more difficult.
You know what? I'm just going to make the assumption that, you know, Ernie, now I'm going to make the assumption. People, that's an easy one to me because my father stuffed Black history facts down my throat. But I'm like, you know what? We got to make sure people look at the clock don't realize that clock and those elevator doors and that hair press, all that Black folks. Try to live without Black folks' inventions for 72 hours. You will not make it.
No, you will not. So I'm going to take a slightly different twist to your question. Yes, we need Black History Month, but I think it needs a facelift. And I'm very appreciative of Carter G. Woodson. He read one of the most tremendous books I've ever read. He wrote one of the most tremendous books I've ever read, The Miseducation of the Negro.
Oh, that's an amazing book. That's an amazing book.
But I think it's time for it to evolve to the next level. And I would like to rename it African History Month.
Okay, and not African American History, just African History Month.
Right.
Okay.
And as an educator, I know you'll see where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very appreciative of Negro History Month. I'm very appreciative of Black History Month and African American History Month. But I think it should be titled African History Month because first we're lied to about American history.
Right.
So the lie in American history frames or creates context for us to be constrained within the lie of American history. So we're forced to create a month called Black History or African American history. If we change it to African history, then we open up the truth about the fact that there were Africans going back and forth across the Atlantic long before 1619. And I'm talking about even before enslavement.
Right, which is what Dr. Johnson just talked about. I'm not sure if you heard the interview we just did. She was taking us all the way back to 1502 talking about, you know, what was happening with the trade and what was happening with Africans coming into the country on a regular basis.
I'm talking about even before the slave trade.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
I'm talking about they came before Columbus. I know you're familiar with that work.
Yes, yes.
So when we open it up as African history, what you'll find is that we have actually 12,000 years of history, not simply 400.
Right.
Now, that's not to diminish the 400 years.
Right.
But if I were to offer you $400 in one hand and then offer you $10,000 to $12,000 in the other hand, which one's more valuable?
Absolutely. That's an easy question. That is an easy question.
I mean?
Right. I know what you mean. The extension of the long arm of our history rather than just this short drop in the bucket that we talk about with 400 years.
So let me close with this. I'm not diminishing Harriet Tubman.
Right.
But I'm saying she had ancestors.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
That poured that rebellious spirit into her.
Yeah.
That we sometimes forget. And then you're going to have a lot of Negroes that's going to call your radio station that will say, I'm a descendant of a slave. I don't want to be associated with Africa.
Right.
And that's a part of the lie of American exceptionalism that we've been taught here in these schools.
I like that. Thank you so much. And you can't hang up, though, because you want our book.
Okay.
I want to make sure I get it to you. Let's put that right on your shelf. And just to let people know, if they're not familiar, They Came Before Columbus is by Ivan Van Sertima. And there's also another book, Before the Mayflower, History of Black America, which is by Lerone Bennett Jr. So folks need to get both of those books and add them to their shelf. Hold on one second, Ernie. Thank you so much. Ernie won our prize. We'll keep going. We have Kenneth on the line. Kenneth, how are you? Kenneth, are you with us? All right, let's move on. How about to Frank? Frank, are you there?
Dr. King.
How are you doing? Is this Frank or Kenneth?
This is Frank.
How you doing? We're working on our system today, so bear with us. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for taking my call, doctor.
Absolutely.
I wanted to say, touch on something just like the young man said prior, definitely needs a facelift. We should definitely keep it, and the truth needs to be told. There's a lot of stuff out there that these kids do not know, The younger people do not know about our history. It did not start with slavery, for one. Our history is so rich and deep. We invented every form of music. We invented so many different things that that a lot of people do not know about. And like I said, these things need to be taught and preserved, basically. And I would like to say, in no way, stretch, or form, do I want Dr. King and all the other people to be forgotten. But let's bring up some other names and make these like a mainstay of our history, and things need to be taught to these young people. You know, it's hard hearing, not hard, but you hear the same things, like you said, every month. But, you know, I don't, just be a facelift, some new breath of life breathe into it, you know, something different. Like I said, so it reach a little bit deeper into it, our history and stuff.
Now, let me ask you in terms of that, does that mean that we shouldn't have a Black History Month, that we should evolve it into something else?
It needs to be a Black History Year, I believe.
A Black History Year, okay.
Like I said, I want to be dwelled so much deeper. Like I said, other than Harriet Tubman, other than Martin Luther King, other than Malcolm X.
What we call the Big Six, the same people.
Yes, the same people. It's so much deeper.
Right.
And you touched on one other thing that I wanted to say as far as a White History Month. I say let them have it. And then maybe the truth will be told then. Mm. They'll find out the truth about their own history, to how much genocide they created, murder and death that they've done throughout their time, you know, that they didn't have anything but racism. You know, I say let them try to have their White History Month, but let them learn the truth about themselves.
Okay.
And then maybe that'll be something different they can dwell upon, and then they'll know what the heck is going on here.
All right. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for calling, folks.
Have a nice day.
You too. As we talk about Black History Month, one of the things I think is very interesting is the way in which companies work to monetize our suffering, our pain, our celebration. Well, Adidas put out a shoe, what they call their Black History Month shoe. Now, understand that Nike does this every year. They roll out a Black History Month sneaker collection because apparently, for us to celebrate Black History Month, we need to buy more tennis shoes and make some corporation more millions of dollars, because that's how we celebrate our month. Well, Adidas has jumped into the game. And it's along with the dropping of shoes at Christmas or at the NBA All-Star Games, they released their Black History Month sneaker. It's called Celebrating Black Culture Ultra Boost Uncaged. Folks, when you go take a look at these shoes, they had to actually pull these shoes back off the market, because the Black History Month shoe that Adidas put out to celebrate our month was a creamy white shoe, devoid of any of the usual colors, any of the usual patterns. Its only visible details was a little bit of red, black, and purple in the highlights. For Black History Month, they released an all-white shoe. I'm just going to let that just rest there. That's Adidas. Now, you have Adidas on the one hand doing that. They had to officially withdraw that shoe because of all of the backlash from folks going, how do you celebrate the culture of Black and African people in this country by releasing an all-white shoe? Like, what are you trying to tell us, and what exactly are you messaging to us that Black History Month gets summed up in a white tennis shoe? And then on the other hand, you have Nike unveiling their sneaker lineup for Black History Month. They do it every single year. It's a multi-sneaker collection to celebrate African-American history and inclusion. They have their Equality by LeBron. They have another version of that. They have a version of a tennis shoe with the Martin Luther King Jr. quote hanging off the side. See, I got a problem with that, folks. I got a problem when Budweiser celebrates Black History Month and Coca-Cola celebrates Black History Month. I got a problem with McDonald's celebrates Black History Month, because what you see is the monetizing of a month that's supposed to be about educating people about the contributions of Black people to this country, and it becomes about tennis shoes and Big Macs. So should we even have the month anymore? 410-319-8888. Let's talk about it. I have Frank on the phone. Frank, how are you? All right, we'll move on from Frank. Okay, I have Joseph on the phone. Joseph, how are you?
Good evening, my sister.
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
I am great, thank you. And I think it's beautiful what you're doing. And in response to your question, well, I'm in I'm an old school seasoned African American sociology history major graduate from Towson State University.
Welcome to the table.
everything I'm hearing resonates loud and clear to me. My biggest problem is I've always felt that they needed to be extremely heavy emphasis on African American history in our school system. Period. The whole school system.
Right.
Now, and I look at what is causing so much self hatred and interracial racism amongst us, and I have to immediately go back to knowledge is power, which would allow people to examine the Constitution of the United States. And if you have the knowledge, and if that's taught, you would know that it wasn't written for us.
Right.
Now, once you understand what's been a true benefit to us, you have an understanding of how you develop an understanding of how to research it and utilize any resources that can help you go from point A to point B. Now, when you talk about self-hatred, I go immediately back to the Constitution, because what a lot of us don't realize is that quietly, and I mean very quietly, you know, Martin Luther King persuaded Lyndon Baines Johnson in 1969 to have this Voting Rights Act.
Right.
But guess what? Martin is probably turning over his grave, because he went along with the program as best he could back then, thinking that things would change as far as voting rights are concerned. But how about the fact that every 25 years,
it comes back
Congress
up again,
secretly votes. I mean, they're not doing like Trump does now and hold up all these big citation explanations.
Right.
And
they
just
move forward, decide and announce.
To celebrate the fact that they're renewing our right to vote.
Right.
But I ain't got nothing against Pedro or Mohammed or anybody else that comes here. But why is it that if they're lucky enough to get over the wall and they get the GED and they get a job and they recite.
Well, I want to go back. Did you say lucky enough to get over the wall? I mean, are you speaking tongue in cheek with that? Like, I'm not sure where you're going with
that. When I say lucky to get over the wall, I'm talking about getting to the country.
Okay. So, because, you know, they don't all just come over the wall. There are a lot of different ways.
That.
Okay. So I just want to be clear about
that. I know
that. Okay.
And I also know that where they have legal access to come to this country, they don't want to let them in then, if you are of color.
Okay.
Now, my point was that why is it that those who are fortunate to get into this country, why do they have full citizenship rights and we don't? Okay.
Right.
That's what my problem is.
Okay. All right. Let me think. I got to stop you there. Oh, I appreciate you so much for calling. Folks, the conversation is getting very interesting. And I think that when we start thinking about Black History Month, it should not be framed as an either or, as in think about Black History Month and then let's talk about what's happening with people, brown people who are coming in this country who are undocumented, as if that's taking something away from us. I think the either or argument gets us nowhere. When we start talking about Black History Month, we can also be clear that there's also a Hispanic History Month in this country. Like, it's an and both, not an either or. If we're talking about getting rid of Black History Month, I would go a step further and say we're also talking about getting rid of a Hispanic Heritage Month, getting rid of Women's History Month, saying that, you know what, all voices are going to be included because all voices were present in the founding of this country. Our country wasn't just founded, upheld by, built by white men with property. Like, that is not the correct narrative that defines our country. In fact, even the people who were oppressed, their voices still rang loud and clear because they helped to build this country on their back. Their sweat and their blood is mixed with the soil of this land, to kind of paraphrase Frederick Douglass. So it's not an either or, and I think that debate doesn't get us anywhere. We have Clarence on the phone. Clarence, how are you?
Hey, thanks for taking the call, Dr. K.
Absolutely.
Just very quickly, what you just said, Dr. K, that's only your spirituality coming through there. That's your humanity. That's not their humanity, okay?
We got to add a little bit of humanity, though. Come on now.
They don't
have
to. But Dr. K, the history, black history. Now, you speak of it in history as like World War One. That's not World War One. World War One began when Europeans decided to wage war against everything, everyone on the planet, from Cortez down in the South American bases to the settlers over here at James, wherever it started in America and on the African continent. That was waging war, the conquering of one continent and bringing our people here as slaves and settling America. That was a conquest. Okay, that was warfare. That is the history of the world. Now, you want to talk about black history, I always think of it to this day, even though I can rattle out some of the facts that you're taught academically in this country, but World War One began when white folks, Europeans, went nuts on the rest of the world, and it still continues. We were brought here under a warfare. And this war is still continuing. So I don't get the black history thing unless you're going to start right there, because they talk about exploration and settlement. No, I'm talking about conquest of black and brown people who lived on different continents and taking a land. That's the history. Now,
right.
If you want to
include
black history in that, then fine, yeah. You know. But Dr. K, may I very quickly... When you talk about where black history starts,
there's
a gentleman by the name of Robert Duvall. He wrote a book some time ago called Black Genesis, where there's a stretch of like 2,000 miles of desert that goes from Egypt into Africa, where he uncovered like gas stations where African people had stored water. They had water stored like gas stations because the distances were so vast until they had to do that. And in the caves, these were black people. And he's probably one of the only white Europeans that will publicly write a book and say this. And when you want to talk about black history, let's take it back a bit further. You know, that's just my point there.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So, I appreciate you calling. Folks, there's a lot of information that we just got in terms of thinking about black history in a different way. Robert Duvall wrote the book Black Genesis, The Ancient Origins of Egypt. But how do we expand it? Maybe it's what some of the callers said. Black history gets expanded to African history. Maybe we realize that we're more than just 400 years of history, which is just a drop in the bucket when we think about the long line of black history. History that extends beyond these shores all the way back to Africa. It's a very interesting discussion, and it's one that we have to explore. We're going to leave it here for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to take the conversation from kind of an international conversation to making it a local conversation. The Baltimore ceasefire starts tonight. Let's talk about ways we can heal our city, particularly as we kick off Black History Month. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us.
Good afternoon. Taking a look at the MTA systems, we do have on the MARC trains right now, Penn Train 537 operating with a 20-minute delay. The Camden and Brunswick Line trains are operating on schedule. Light Rail Link, Metro Subway Link, both on time and on the Local Link buses. The 26 bus southbound diverting at Bentlow and Walbrook, 26 northbound at Bentlow and North for construction in that area. For the MTA Transit team, I'm Kirk Kroenke on 88.9 FM, WEAA, the voice of the community.